rebuttal?
But thank you, Justice Kadish.
And how much?
3 minutes.
Okay. So all that will happen at 3 minutes is the yellow light will come on and there will be a tone, but your time will continue to run down. And if it gets to zero, there's no time left for rebuttal.
Okay. Understood.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Jennifer Mascheri on behalf of the petitioners, APCO Equipment, and Leonard Owens. The main issue in the petitioner's writ, of course, is recording a portion of the neuropsychological exam. This issue is coming up over and over in Nevada district courts. In the writ at issue, the court rubber-stamped the discovery commissioner's report and recommendations without looking at or doing the mandatory good cause analysis under Rule 35. The discovery commissioner did not complete that analysis. Essentially, no Nevada neuropsychologist will perform the test if the testing portion alone is audio recorded or observed. This would deprive defendants in civil litigation in Nevada from obtaining a neuropsychological exam. In terms of AB 244 that the court asked us to prepare to speak about, it is unconstitutional in the same way that 52380 was. And why? That is because it takes the power away from the judiciary to control the procedure of Rule 35 and civil litigation exams in Nevada. There was a recent decision that wasn't cited to this court. In addition to Nevada District Court Judge Reynolds' decision in the Collins case that AB 244 is unconstitutional, Magistrate Albrecht in the federal courts recently hearing a motion to compel on the same issues in Finley et al. Versus Bowman et al., case 223CV00930RFBDJA, refused to apply AB 244 for the same reason that it was an issue in Lyft, that it was an issue with regard to 52380. Because
didn't AB 244 address all of the issues that in the Lyft case?
Justice Bell, the issue is, as I was getting to with Magistrate Albright, is the problem with that is the exams and to control the procedure of the exams is under the exclusive guide of the judiciary. AB 244 is but a procedural mechanism to take control over those exams away from the judiciary.
So do you think the addition of the language, whether it's compelled by court order, which I agree would probably most often would be found in that context in litigation, but they added a contractual obligation or any other type of obligation. Do you think that saves it from unconstitutionality?
I don't, Your Honor, and the reason I don't is because, again, it's an in run around 52380. The judiciary has to have control over the procedure of these exams. AB 244 takes that control away.
And that question, and it's sort of rudimentary, but we're here on an extraordinary writ. AB 244 was not briefed in the petition. Indeed, Lyft wasn't even referenced in the petition except as a pending case, and it had already by then been decided for some time. I question whether this case is the proper vehicle for us to be undertaking this analysis, and I'd like your views, and I'll ask your colleagues on the other side the same question.
Understood. And the reason I launched into AB 244 is because that appears to be respondent or real party in interest Rifley's sole argument, that this writ should...
The whole case was briefed before that, so I don't think
understood. And I'm, Justice Kadish, I'm specifically focusing on their most recent motion to dismiss the writ for mootness. It relies on AB 244. The case in front of magistrate Albright relies on 244. In fact, the lobbying and passage of 244.
Let me just cut you off. I'm sorry.
Yes.
But
no.
To me, we don't take writs, especially not in a context like this, unless the issue was well-developed in district court, raised and resolved there, and we have some hope of advancing the jurisprudence in the arena because it's urgent and well-briefed in the case before us. And I'm looking at this case, and I'm not faulting anybody, but it strikes me that this is not appropriate for extraordinary writ relief, which is the question I'm asking you.
Okay. Why should you decide this writ?
Yeah, in this case. I get that it's an important
Understood.
Issue.
Because it should be decided on the merits because it pertains to an important issue with regard to how these Rule 35 exams are governed and how the procedure goes in district courts in the state courts of Nevada. Here, in particular, the Discovery Commissioner, in reaching her rules and recommendations to the court, did not do the mandatory good cause analysis to have this neuropsychological exam, the testing portion, either audio recorded or data shared with non-neuropsychologists.
There was briefing about those issues, wasn't there?
Correct, but the bottom line, Justice Kadish, is Rule 35 requires the good faith analysis be performed, and the Discovery Commissioner did not do that. And the court simply approved.
Was there a hearing?
Yes, Your Honor, there was a hearing.
The report and recommendation shows there was a hearing on December 2022.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did the parties argue about whether there was good cause or wasn't good cause for recording at that hearing?
Your Honor, there was no good cause argument necessarily. It was more about the tenets of the stipulation and order that was that preceded that motion to compel, what line items were going to be accepted and what line items were not. The Discovery Commissioner ordered that the exam be audio recorded and that data be shared with non-neuropsychologists without the good faith weighing, the good faith analysis.
Let me interrupt you for a moment if I could on this issue of data, because I know you mentioned that in your pleadings, but I don't see anywhere in the Discovery Commissioner's report, anywhere in the district court's affirmation of that report, or anywhere in the court's minutes that the Discovery Commissioner ordered the sharing of data, raw testing materials, anything like that.
She did. The language was that it was to be audio recorded and the results shared with attorney and their expert.
So it's the audio recording that you're referring to as the data being shared?
Correct. The testing, the audio recording of the testing. The testing produces data that includes the oral memorialization of that testing.
So for purposes of what you're saying that she ordered be shared, it's just the audio recording?
Correct.
Okay.
It's not like some other test documents or things that we're talking about.
Raw data would be shared between professionals, meaning neuropsychologists, psychologists,
semantics is very important here, okay?
Understood.
What I'm saying is nowhere in any of those orders or court minutes did the court, the Discovery Commission, or the district court order the sharing of raw data or testing materials. I know she ordered the audio recording, but it seems that you're just implying that those were other things that she ordered.
No, I'm specifically referring to the testing portion being audio recorded and that memorialization being shared with non-neuropsychologists.
Okay.
Well, but it's shared only with counsel and experts, and there was a protective order entered.
The issue is, under the Code of Ethics for Nevada neuropsychologists, pursuant to the evidence that we submitted with the writ, they are not allowed, under their Code of Ethics, to share data, to share testing with non-neuropsychologists.
Even if compelled by court order?
We would simply not have an exam. The exam would not occur if a neuropsychologist under their code of ethics was forced to share the data.
Don't the ethics allow them to share it if the person being examined consents to it?
Your Honor, my understanding is their ethics only allow them to share it with neuropsychologists.
And this, these neuropsychologists that would be doing this exam are not someone who's actually treating this person, right?
It's that
someone
is correct.
Examining them in the litigation context.
That is correct.
Defense request.
That is correct.
Okay.
Counsel, is the concern that sharing the information outside of a peer-to-peer relationship would undermine the efficacy of these tests?
Yes. It's like the court talked about in Frediluco in terms of the issues with regard to a third-party observer or recorder infringing on the nature of the exam, inserting an adversarial process, an exam meant to be neutral, invalidating the test results. That's another concern of the Nevada neuropsychologist that you saw in the amicus brief and in our argument, that the mere presence of an observer during the testing portion would then render the results of those tests unreliable. And it's the court's duty as a gatekeeper to make sure that evidence that goes to the jury is reliable evidence. And if we get testing that's unreliable, it doesn't help the jury. And by this writ, we're encouraging a narrow opinion that rules on this Rule 35 in the context of psychological and neuropsychological exams. And
here, how do you respond to the amicus brief's assertion that there is, in fact, no ethical prohibition against recording the exam?
That's simply not the case, according to the IOPC, which is an organization of neuropsychologists, 8,000 neuropsychologists. Their peer-reviewed articles, their literature, all are in line with cases like Frediluco in terms of the mere presence of an observer because of the character and nature of a neuropsychological exam during the testing portion would invalidate and skew, if you will, the results. They can record the interview portion of the exam and everything else. It is the purview of the neuropsychologists regarding the testing that they have this ethical obligation to keep that closed universe.
But is that the code that's been adopted in Nevada, or is it the APA code? Because I think those might differ some.
I think that you're right, Justice Bell. They do differ some, but it is my understanding that in their code of ethics, that testing portion of a neuropsychological exam is tainted by observers or audio recording, and so a Nevada neuropsychologist won't do it in that regard.
Weren't those same arguments presented to this court before we adopted the revised Rule 35 that came into effect in 2019, and this court did its best and issued the rules as we find them?
Your Honor, I believe that was considered, but again, this writ focuses on that very narrow issue of the good cause analysis.
So the question on this writ is whether there is good cause in this case to allow the recording. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. It should be remanded for that good cause analysis.
Okay. All right, did you want to reserve?
If there's no other questions, I'll reserve.
I did have one.
Rebuttal.
Go ahead.
Let's assume that the court chooses to address the AB 244 issue, and we decide that that's constitutional. What is left of your writ?
What is left of my writ is what I was just speaking about in terms of it needs to be sent back for that good cause analysis. Is there good cause for this to be recorded?
If we assume that AB 244 is constitutional, and then we apply it,
we
would have to go back for a good cause analysis?
So if you apply AB 244, as I understand it, then that takes the power out of the judiciary to not only weigh the good cause, but to be the gatekeeper for any exam in civil litigation in Nevada. They won't be able to perform those gatekeeping.
I'm not asking you to dispute me about what the judiciary can do. I'm asking
Understood.
What relief would be left for your writ if AB 244 is constitutional and were to be applied.
I believe AB 244 wasn't enacted at the time I filed my writ, so it would still have to be remanded to the state courts to do the Rule 35 analysis. And the state courts, as we've seen, are split in whether or not they would apply AB 244, okay, at least at this time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Justices. Chief Justice Kadish, Jordan Schnitzer for Respondent, Nacy Riffley. My plan is to reserve 5 minutes for Mr. Gayan on behalf of NJA. We'll see how that goes, but that's my plan. One of the first things I think we should do, and I think I need to take some responsibility for this, is narrow the focus. I think some of the briefing got beyond what is actually properly before this court. And so if we look at the remedy and the relief sought below and narrow the focus of what's properly before this court, I think we actually have some pretty easy decisions to make. So if you look at their appendix 230, their objection to the DCRR, they said the foregoing is the finite objection that defendants present to the court for consideration. Then on 231, they say the issue of audio recording the testing portion of the neuropsychological examination only, which is the only objection being presented by defendants herein. Those are their words. So that's the only objection they brought up from the discovery commissioner, was whether or not the neuropsychological exam should be recorded, not about whether I should get it. And Justice Hernan, you were talking about the raw data. If you look at Appendix 121, Item 12, when we opposed the motion to compel, we said one of the conditions we want is we want the raw data. That's on 121. On Appendix 158, when they responded to Item 12, they said, quoting, no objection to production of non-privileged items within a retained expert's file consistent with NRCP. And so my position is they've waived any argument about the raw data because they said it. They stipulated to it in front of the discovery commissioner. That's why it's not really set forth in the order, clearly, because they stipulated to it. That wasn't at issue. And so when you look at that and you look at everything that's left, I think they lose for two reasons. One is they lose based on AB 244, which brings us to my motion to dismiss, because whether or not there was good cause, it doesn't matter. With AB 244 out there, if the court were to say the court didn't do a good cause analysis, we're going to go back and say, well, now we get the observer and the recording under AB 244. And we do think there's good cause. We do think it's substantive law. We do think it's constitutional. Justice Pickering, I know you're going to ask me the question, what do I think we should do with this? That was part of my motion to dismiss, and that's why I filed it, because whether or not good cause exists doesn't matter under AB 244. And so if the justices want to talk about the constitutionality, I addressed that in my motion to dismiss. But I could also see the court saying, you know what, that wasn't fully briefed below, and the law as it exists does moot their arguments. And so the purpose of this writ that they filed on the audio recording is moot and shouldn't be dealt with on a writ. So I could see Justice Pickering's point on that. But if you want to talk about good cause analysis, what's interesting is they never actually argued that no good cause analysis was done until the reply in support of their petition. If you look at page 10 of the original petition, their words, the district court erred in holding that good cause exists under NRCP 35. Page 10 of the writ, that's their words. It's not until the reply that they're now coming up and saying, well, the discovery commissioner and the district court didn't do the good cause analysis. The other interesting thing, it's their writ, their petitioner. Where's the transcript from the discovery commissioner's hearing showing it wasn't considered? Under Cousy versus the University and Community College System of Nevada, that's 123 Nevada 598, this court presumes that missing parts of the record support the district court's decision. And so that was their responsibility, if they think it wasn't done, to bring that up. And why didn't they give you the transcript? Because all indications from what we've got show that the discovery commissioner and the district court did consider it. I'll direct you to Appendix 221. Colloquy, this is the minutes from the discovery commissioner's hearing. Colloquy regarding good cause for a recorded examination and the examination. It's right there in the court minutes. So she did consider it. It's just that the magic words good cause didn't show up in their order that they drafted.
Was part of that consideration, sorry to interrupt you, counsel,
No, sure.
Was this notion that recording of the neuropsychological examination would somehow taint the proceedings or contaminate it?
Of course. That was fully briefed in their reply. That was fully briefed in their reply to the...
Was that part of the Discovery Commissioner's determination? Was that something that she considered?
Of course. I mean, in her order, she says, I considered the pleadings from the parties and the arguments of counsel, and so that was something that was briefed and something that was argued. And so I think what they're asking for is they want written findings of good cause. And you know, in the Brunzell context, if the court can tell that the court considered the proper factors, there's not actually a requirement of every single written item. And so if we're not doing it on Brunzell, why are we doing it on a good cause standard that discovery commissioners are dealing with on an everyday basis?
And just if we do entertain the AB 244, and I'm sure Miki Council will discuss this a little bit more, but is the legislature's attempt to fix the prior issues with, I think it was NRCP or the NRS 54, did they really cure the substantive versus procedural issue in AB 244?
Absolutely.
Or is it more of a just, you know, kind of, I mean, they added a couple of remedies. They expanded when, you know, the person being compelled can bring causes of action for a violation of this. But in rather focusing on the person taking the exam, it focuses on the rights of the person being examined. Does that really cure the procedural nature of it? Does it hamstring the district court from being able to be the gatekeeper of this type of procedure?
I think it does it in four separate ways. But first, we have to remember Lyft talks about separation of powers. Mm-hmm. And the separation of powers goes both ways. And so the legislature is the one that has the power to preserve, protect, and create substantive rights under NRS 2.120. I think that's talked about in State v. Connery, 99, Nevada 342. And the judiciary cannot have rules that abridge or modify substantive rights. And so that's the two-step analysis that has to be done is, number one, is there a conflict? Certainly, there's a conflict. Number two, is it substantive? Because if it's substantive, under the separation of powers, that goes to the legislature. And so we think they made it substantive in four different ways, and I think the court would have to strike down all four of them in order to find that it's procedural and not substantive. So, sorry. When we look at the rule, the statute applies not just in discovery, right? And so that makes it substantive. In the Moosey case, from Michigan, talks about it. When it concerns matters beyond just court administration, it's substantive. And so this can be applied in disability exams, insurance contractual exams, pre-litigation, work comp exams, occupational licensing exams. That was all talked about at the legislature. That's one way it makes it substantive. It also creates a private right of action. And that's, if you look at the Seisinger case out of Arizona, statutes that define a cause of action are substantive. So that's a second way that the statute is now substantive. And it also codifies a pre-existing right that was eroded over time. And we talked about this in the briefing. Under common law, back in 1891, the United States Supreme Court said a court can't force the other side's doctor to come examine you. And so when the legislature guards a pre-existing right that's been eroded over time, that's substantive. And I refer to the Whitlock case, which is, when the legislature sees fit to enthrone a historical practice, it's a substantive enactment. So that's a third way. And then the fourth way is when it reflects careful legislative balancing of policy considerations. So here, it furthers public policy, not just judicial business. It talks about other ways outside of the court context. And the Indiana case in Church v. State talked about that. When that case involved creating protections for child victims of sex crimes against being deposed. So even though it encroached into the judiciary, it still was found to be substantive. And so the court's going to have to say all four of those reasons separately make it unconstitutional, because any one of those that stand mean it's a substantive bail substantive law that has to be maintained. And not only that, I think the legislative intent was clear. It says it's a bill relating to health care, establishing substantive rights, and it says that the parties retain these rights. And so it's referencing these historical rights that that party's had. And with that, I think I'm out of time. I'm going to pass it to Mr. Gay, unless the justices have any questions.
Just a quick question.
Sure.
My understanding of AB 244 was that it was made effective upon its passage and approval, correct?
Correct.
So to the extent an exam hasn't occurred yet, then the protections of that would apply to any exam moving forward. So same question to you that I asked counsel. Assuming we were to take up AB 244 and find it's constitutional and it's already in effect, what, if anything, from a relief standpoint, is left from the writ?
That's exactly why I filed the motion to dismiss, because I think it's moot, because under AB 244, there is no good cause analysis needed. It's the observer and the recording are given as a matter of right, and so that's why I filed the motion to dismiss.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dave?
Good afternoon, Chief Justice Kadish, justices, may it please the court. Michael Gahan from Kemp Jones on behalf of Nevada Justice Association. You could tell from my briefing, I'm not going to get into the specific issues and facts of Ms. Rifley's case, but I am commenting on behalf of the Nevada Justice Association some overarching principles, and there's just three of those. One is the AB 244 issue, and I'd like to address that first briefly. Justice Pickering's question goes right to the heart of that, and this is a bit of a strange record because of the effective date, as Justice Herndon pointed out, and passage and signing into law of AB 244. It did not happen until after the parties essentially finished their briefing on the writ petition, but before I filed my amicus brief, and so I'm really the only one that has tackled that issue on behalf of NJA. But obviously the parties then took it up in the motion to dismiss. So it is a strange record on an extraordinary writ relief, no record at all. And so one perfectly reasonable result would be for the court to deny the writ petition and let the district court resolve AB 244 in the first instance, as petitioner's counsel noted that other district courts are doing right now, and find a better developed record either which way, whether it's constitutional or unconstitutional. And my understanding is courts below are finding it both ways. And so I suspect there might be a number of writs coming up, and they'd get consolidated, and the court could handle it at that point with a very robust record, because I'm sure you need more paper to review. But I'm not sure that this is the right case for tackling the constitutionality of a brand new statute. However, if the court does decide to address it, I'd like to turn to the questions from Justice Bell and Justice Lee about whether AB 244 actually meets the Lyft test. Now, the Lyft test is not a new test. The Lyft court just relied on longstanding Nevada law on separation of powers and what's required. And frankly, if it's substantive, the inquiry ends. If it's a substantive law, as Mr. Schnitzer pointed out, from Nevada statutes, the legislature has the power to enact substantive statutes, and that's what happened here. And I won't go back through the substantive analysis that Mr. Schnitzer did. It's in my briefs, but it's quite clearly a substantive law. The legislature stated it right in the preamble of the bill, so they intended it to be that. So there's no question about their intent of what they were doing. It's right there in black and white. I'd like to also touch on the other questions that were raised today very briefly. I'm down to about 70 seconds. But Justice Kadish raised my second point from my brief, was that all of these alleged ethical concerns and things raised by various associations and examiners were thoroughly commented on during the 2019 NRCP amendments. And I understand Chief Justice Kadish and Justice Pickering were in a lot of those committee meetings and probably reviewed a lot of these things and debated them. And the court ultimately decided to give trial courts discretion when there's good cause for these things and for these examinations in a neuropsychological setting, a mental examination. And I It's cited in my papers, the DeFiore case out of New Jersey from earlier, well, now it's last year, said, with all due respect, these professional associations do not set court rules. The courts do. And there's a lot more at play besides these associations' ethical concerns. There's evidentiary concerns and the rights of parties to cross-examine witnesses and full disclosure. When you have what the DeFiore court deemed an inherently adversarial process. So my time is out. I wish I had a little more, but I don't. So thank you, unless there's any questions.
Any other questions? No.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Counsel. I will I'll give you an extra minute. We chewed up a lot of your time.
I appreciate that, Justice Kadish. Thank you. I'm going to take my time to address some of the things brought up by the real party in interest. First and foremost, the legislature cannot abrogate a rule of civil procedure where the rule is procedural. They keep beating the drum. However, this does nothing to chip away at the separation of powers doctrine. This AB 244 is simply a procedural mechanism that takes control of the courts over civil litigation exams, and it simply doesn't have the right to do that. This issue keeps coming up. Magistrate.
But isn't the statute broader than just Rule 35 exams, though?
Yes, Justice Kadish, but the narrow and finite issue that can't be ignored is it still takes the power away from the court over the procedure by which these exams are conducted. Magistrate Albrecht, in the recent hearing in the Finley case in November of 2023, says this issue has to be taken up. It keeps coming up over and over again. I keep seeing it in my courts. This is usurping the power of the judiciary. He ultimately refused to apply it because it was, according to the Erie Doctrine, procedural, so he applied federal law. Is my time up? Okay.
It is indeed.
All right. Well, that was quick. I appreciate the time.
Happens that way.
Thank you.
Thanks very much to all of you for your briefing and our